It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 105 of an NFL draft themed edition of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? Eating challenges are almost always funny, but what if the threat of death is a possibility? A chicken wing place is testing that out. And why are the Washington Commanders getting way too close to Nazi Germany with their attempt to popularize a new slogan? At 6:30, Kyle Yeomans of DallasCowboys.com joins me to discuss the boys' draft strategy, as well as the strange offseason for Jerry Jones' team. And a mere seconds, we're less than an hour from the first round of the NFL draft, so I'm spending my first two segments with ESPN draft guru Matt Miller, talking Longhorns, those QB prospects, and more. I'm your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Matt Miller is one of the main guys that ESPN for years now has turned to share his draft expertise. He's also a not-so-undercover Texas Longhorns fan, and he's nice enough to join me now to talk about some of his favorite UT prospects and a whole lot more. Of course, you can read his work at ESPN.com and give him a follow on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. Matt, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing well. Thanks for the time. As always, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure talking to those who really know their stuff, especially somebody who's a not-so-undercover Texas Longhorn football fan now like yourself. And
right.
There are is a heavy Longhorn flavor in this year's draft, Matt. Great to be back at a place where we have multiple Texas players possibly getting drafted in the first round, multiple guys who may end up going on day two as well. Just a general overview, do you think Steve Sarkisian really has this program going in the right direction in a way that is sustainable, not just for the next couple of years, but really through for the foreseeable future as Texas finds itself in the SEC starting next season?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because I was on the pro day circuit this year and I didn't get to go to the Texas pro day. I was at Ohio State, which was the same day. And it's crazy how many people were talking about the Texas pro day. You're at Ohio State and people are talking about the Texas pro day and how stacked it is. And that, you know, it's so set up well for the future. You know, people talk about, you know, the wide receiver groups, the offensive line, defensive line, and just how set up the Longhorns are for the future. And it is exciting, you know, after a long stretch of not having, you know, high profile draft prospects, it is good to get back to that point where I have 11 Texas players in my top 300 this year. That has not been the case, I think, ever since I've been doing this. So it is great to get to that point where you see Texas not just competing in the college football playoffs, but you see them competing with, you know, the blue blood schools in terms of being that pipeline to the NFL. And that trickles down, you know, that helps recruiting. It obviously helps in, you know, now in this day and age of the transfer portal, it helps to be a school that's going to have first round prospects, you know, again, after having, you know, Bijan last year broke that long, you know, run of not having a first rounder, you know, this year, we'll get Byron Murphy in the first round. That'll be the first time a Texas defender has been selected in the first round since 2015. So it certainly feels like things are getting back to some of the you know, Mack Brown heyday of NFL prospects.
And that would have been fellow defensive lineman Malcolm Brown, who ends up getting selected in the first round back in 2015. Let's go ahead and start with Byron Murphy. There is one no-doubter first-rounder from this Texas roster. It is Byron Murphy, who is typically going in the middle of the first round as it stands right now. What do you like about Byron Murphy as a prospect, and is there a good comparison for you in terms of a guy who is currently in the NFL?
Yeah, when I did my player comps show for ESPN, I suggested Matabuke. You know, it's a little bit of a shorter, but just powerful, fast, active interior defensive lineman. You know, Byron got overshadowed, you know, by Tavondre Sweat and his, you know, impact this past year. But Byron was the better player for me. You know, what he did last year, you know, Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year, All-American, first team Big 12, 33 quarterback pressures was the most in the Big 12. And I think people get lost in the, oh, well, you know, he didn't have a ton of sacks, but you have to look at what he was asked to do in that 3-3-5 defense, the way he was expected to play, you know, basically on the shoulder of the center so often and control things at the point of attack. But you know, he is a great athlete. I think he's just scratching the surface of the type of player he can be. And, you know, it's watch him play offense and you see, you know, the type of athlete that he is. I think he had 2 touchdowns last year. So, you know, he is just a really, really good all around athlete and playing, you know, a position that's becoming incredibly valuable as a three technique. You know, we're seeing those guys just get paid in the NFL. And I think that's where, you know, his range is, you know, he could go 8 to the Atlanta Falcons to 16 with the Seattle Seahawks is probably where his actual draft range sits right now.
The two Texas wide receivers tend to go in the first round more often than not. Is there one that you like more between A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy? And ultimately, do you think both guys end up as first-round draft picks, considering the huge upside talent-wise?
I do think they both go in the first round, yeah. And I would say I lean more toward A.D. Mitchell just because the size-speed ratio, you know, 6'2", 205 to run a 4.34. To me, that's as impressive as you know, Worthy running the 4.21 at 165 pounds. You know, you're 40 pounds heavier. That's moving for that size. You know, with AD, he's been such a big game playmaker. You know, 5 touchdowns in the 5 CFP games between Georgia and Texas, 11 touchdowns this past year, and just 1 drop. That really stands out to me. And I know there are times he fights the ball a little bit, but the ball just doesn't hit the turf. You know, with Worthy, he was so important to Texas, especially early in his career when he was like the only guy in the passing game, it felt like. So you could look at his production and say, oh, well, like his production went down, but you know, his import to that offense was huge. And he's going to be someone that instantly impacts the NFL because of that vertical speed. He's a good route runner. He's a great punt returner. And again, like when you talk about all time Texas wide receivers, I think you actually have to put him on that list, not just because the production, you know, the 26 touchdowns, the, you know, 3,000 yards, total yards, I think he had. Like, you have to talk about what he meant to the program, especially, you know, 3 years ago. So both are fantastic players. I think AD probably goes a little bit higher just because of the size-speed ratio.
Yeah, it's hard to comp Xavier Worthy because he is so small, but he's got a toughness about him as well that plays way heavier than that 165 pounds. Deshaun Jackson may be a decent comp considering the explosiveness as well. It's funny with A.D. Mitchell, though, Matt, because you reach a point in every pre-draft analysis where something negative has to be said about every guy. And so last week, it wasn't even a headline. It was a tweet that was sent out, and here's the gist of the tweet without saying a player's name. Talented wide receiver is a diva, especially when he's hangry. Now, for you, you try and stay positive with a lot of these guys. Because you've been doing this for so long now, are you able to snuff out when sometimes it's just BS or sometimes it's maybe a little bit of misinformation being sent out by another team to try and get a guy to slide to them because it looks pretty certain that he's going to go by a certain point?
Yeah, it's always a rival agent trying to push one guy down to bring another up this time of year. It's tough. Like you said, I've been doing this a long time. You try to learn who to trust, who not to this time of year. And I think the thing about the anonymous quotes that are negative, I always wonder, what's the agenda? Why is this coming out? Yeah. Is it coming out because it's legitimate and you have teams that are trying to set expectations? Or is it, you know, like you said, where it's a situation of trying to push one person down to pull another up? I'll say this. I don't know that the A.D. Mitchell could have the success he had at Georgia and Texas, you know, being a person that's not accountable and reliable. Find me a good receiver who's not a little bit of a diva, and I'll be shocked that, every wide receiver I've ever encountered in my life has that idea. I want the ball. I'm never covered. I'm always open. You kind of expect that. So I think you could say this receiver is a diva. You could say that about every receiver in this draft. And I'll say, as someone who has skipped breakfast today, I also get that way when I'm hangry. So we are probably one and the same, A.D. Mitchell and I, when it comes to that.
Yeah, hanger. It's not just theory. It's science. Coming up, Matt Miller and I continue our conversation talking about some Longhorn prospects whose stock has slipped since the end of the college football season. I'm chatting with Matt Miller, NFL draft expert with ESPN. Read his work at ESPN.com and give him a follow on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. We'll also talk about the quarterbacks that will be selected tonight, and an overview of the Dallas Cowboys and what they may do over the next three nights right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with Matt Miller. He is one of ESPN's NFL draft experts. Before that, though, need to give you a couple of quick programming notes. As for today's show, after my conversation with Matt, I'm going to be joined by Kyle Yeomans of DallasCowboys.com, getting a Cowboys overview on the upcoming draft and what has been a weird offseason for this team, in large part because of, yeah, their owner, Jerry Jones. That's coming up just after 6:30. And tomorrow, I am welcoming my buddy Kevin Dunn back to the show. He's going to be a regular part of this going forward with weekly appearances. This is going to be his second time on Sports Day Plus this week. Of course, that premiere appearance was just a couple of days ago. Well, he wants to hop on tomorrow's show to share his thoughts on the first round of the NFL draft and also what people might be able to expect in day two with the second and third rounds, and then, of course, that final day, rounds 4-7. So that is coming up tomorrow. But now I continue with Matt Miller, one of my favorite guys to talk to about the NFL draft, and I'm not alone. It's why ESPN has him as one of their main guys this time of year. Read his work at ESPN.com, and also do give him a follow on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. And Matt, we talked a few minutes ago about Byron Murphy, who everyone expects to be the first Longhorn taken in tonight's first round. And his line mate is a guy who, throughout much of the college football season, was considered a first-round draft pick, but things have a way of changing. The end of the year, things were maybe a little bit inconsistent, but unfortunately, Tavondre Sweat has really seen his draft stock fall over the last several months now, with the end of the season itself. I'm curious, though, because he's not alone here. It's not all rosy for Longhorn prospects right now. Whose draft stock do you think has fallen more since the end of the college football season between Tavondre Sweat and tight end Jatavion Sanders, who was also seen as a first-round guy up to a certain point, and now it does feel like we are seeing his name a whole lot more in the second and third rounds?
I definitely Sweat. I think with Sanders, it's, you know, I don't know that I would call it a slide so much as maybe a leveling of expectations, you know. And with Tavondre, it's, you know, the off-field stuff is the thing here. And obviously, you know, the arrest, not a good look for him, especially this time, because you don't have that opportunity to now go back to those teams and say, hey, like, here's what happened. You know, I'm accountable for it. You know, you don't have that time to save face, basically. I think with JT, what's happened is, you know, he is a certain type of tight end. He's a move tight end. For some teams, that's not valuable. For others, it is. And we saw this last year in the draft class with all those tight ends where, you know, some teams liked Trey McBride. Other teams liked Dalton Kincaid. Other teams liked, you know, XYZ. So I think with Sanders, like, he can still go early. You know, I still have him. He's my number 49 overall player. He could still go in the top 40 picks. It's just finding that team that values his type of tight end. With Sweat, the difference is you've got something sustainable. You got something that's concrete that happened off field. It's not a rumor. It's not, oh, well, like, this guy's personality rubbed me the wrong way. Like, no, this was an issue. And I think it reflects back to something that you had heard through the rumor mill was an issue for him earlier in his career, that he had, you know, kind of overcome some of the immaturity. But then you have, you know, the arrest 3 weeks before the draft is definitely not a good spot to be in.
Would Jonathan Brooks be a first-round pick if he had not injured his knee? And do you fully expect him to end up with the Cowboys when it's all said and done, considering some of the obvious connections happening behind the scenes regarding that injury?
He would be in that mix, right, of like a late first-rounder, were it not for the injury. The great news is I've heard he's going to be cleared July 1st, ready to go for training camp, which is huge. Yeah, I mean, late first, I do think is possible. So I would say now, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, Dallas at 56, can he get to Dallas at 56? I don't know that he can. I think he's too talented to fall to 56. I look at teams like, yeah, I mean, definitely the Carolina Panthers in the first round are a team that would be a really good fit for him. The Raiders at 44 are a fit for him. The Chargers at 37, even potentially a fit for him. So I would be shocked if he gets all the way to Dallas in the second round, barring a trade where the Cowboys could certainly come back up. But he is incredibly talented. And I think, you know, Texas fans saw over the course of the season how important he was, you know, not even to be a starter week one, but to watch him develop and blossom. What he does as a runner, what he does as a pass protector is all really fantastic. So I can't wait to see where he lands and how well he does early on.
If there was a most underrated prospect in this year's draft class for the Longhorns, Matt, I think it's Christian Jones. What do you like about Christian Jones, and ultimately, where do you think he ends up getting selected?
Yeah, man, he's just been rock solid at the right tackle spot. You know, yeah. Multi-year starter. Love that about his game. You know, a little bit older. He's a six-year guy. You know, played in, I think, 61 games. He and Bo Nix have both played in 61 games. Mm-hmm. But I love that. Like, you know exactly who he is. You know, he did play left tackle a little bit back in 2021, but just, you know who he's going to be on the right side. A little bit stiff at times in the run game, but as a pass protector, he uses that size well, uses his power, his length. And I think he still has some upside as a guy who was a little bit late to football in high school. So he, to me, projects as someone, if you have a great left tackle, you can get by with Christian Jones as your starting right tackle to find that balance. You know, so probably in the mid to late third round is where I have him right now. It's where I would expect him to come off the board. But I do think he's someone that could be a starting right tackle in the pros.
Should J.J. McCarthy be a top five draft pick? And if he is a top five draft pick, which team do you think jumps up to grab him?
I think he will be. Should is an interesting question. I have him rated 19 overall. You see the upside. You see the wiring. You know, the mental stuff is fantastic. The character's fantastic. That tends to push guys up. Now, who goes to get him? I think the Minnesota Vikings have to be considered the favorite. It just depends on how high they can get. You know, if they can get to three, they probably take Drake May. If they get to four, they probably take J.J. McCarthy, right? If it's not Minnesota, I think Denver makes a ton of sense. He and Sean Payton would certainly do really well together. You know, Payton had a lot of success with Drew Brees. J.J., if you squint hard enough, you can remind you that, you know, not a huge quarterback, a guy who's mobile but good within the pocket, really accurate intermediately. He's poised. He's great on third down. Like, that's going to play really well with a Sean Payton offense.
You and I both watched that college football semifinal playoff game, not the Michigan-Alabama game, although we did watch that one as well, but that Texas-Washington game. I was in the stands for that game, Matt, and I've never left a game more impressed with a guy's throwing ability than Michael Penix. Underrated athleticism as well. We obviously saw what he ran at Washington's Pro Day. I feel like if he is able to stay healthy, and yes, that is a huge if considering his injury history, that he has a chance to be the best quarterback in this draft class. What do you think his ceiling is, assuming, again, big if he can actually stay healthy at the next level?
Yeah, he could be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL if he can stay healthy. And the scheme's going to matter too, I think. If Texas fans only watched that one game of Michael Penix, you're wondering why in the hell is he a second-round prospect. But if you watch the following game against Michigan, you understand that the discrepancy in his play. You know, when he has to move his feet, he hasn't been good. When he has to be accurate, like timing routes, he hasn't been good. Texas, unfortunately, could not get him to move off his spot, and they couldn't disrupt the timing of this route. So he was able to just sit and carve them up. That's what he does well. So if he can go to a team with a good offensive line and some weapons, he could be really, really good really, really early, because the arm strength is fantastic. He's got massive hands. He controls the ball well. Like you said, Trey, he's got underrated mobility that he didn't really use at Washington. If you go back and watch at Indiana, he was a much more mobile guy. Now, he had four straight season-ending injuries when he was at Indiana. That, I think, led to him not being as mobile, but this dude will stand back in the shotgun and carve you up. He has a much stronger arm than Tua, but their play style is really similar, to where the ball's going to come out fast, and if he can be kept clean, he is going to hurt you big time.
What should the Cowboys' focus be in this draft, Matt?
everything. I'm honestly, like, I don't know what they're doing with the free agent situations that they have, you know, with Dax coming up, CD's coming up, Mike is coming up. They have not addressed needs along the offensive line, despite the fact of knowing that they were coming. You know, they don't have a running back. They don't have a number two wide receiver. So Dallas is like a true best player available. And this year, which they need their picks. This is not a year where it's like, hey, let's swing to the fences and go up and get someone. They need the picks because you have to think wide receiver. You got to think left tackle. You got to think running back. You got to be thinking center. You know, they have seven picks. They need every dang one of them. In fact, if they can find a way to get a couple more, they might want to even try to go that route. So, you know, I think offensive line has been a hallmark of this team, the way they built, you know, going back to the heyday of the 90s, even to more recently, you know, when they had such a great offensive line. So I look at an offensive line, whether it be a Graham Barton, Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton, like they've got to address the offensive line early, I would think.
Last question, Matt. What do you love about the NFL draft?
You know, I love that one pick can change everything. You know, whether it be Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or Brock Purdy, like one pick can change everything for a team. So that's the best part of it. Of 257 picks, and you know that just one of them can not just change like one team's future, but can change the entire NFL. So that's the best part every year.
There it is. He is Matt Miller, ESPN's NFL draft expert. Check out his work at ESPN.com and, of course, on all of the TV shows covering the draft as well. Matt, always a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you for sharing your expertise on the show today. And best of luck with things tonight and in the future.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
Coming up, I expand on the Cowboys portion of my conversation with Matt Miller with a guy who knows that team inside and out. Kyle Yeomans is an integral part of DallasCowboys.com. He joins me to share the Dallas Cowboys draft strategy over the next 3 days, as well as what has been a very weird offseason for Jerry Jones' team, right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Kyle Yeomans is one of the main guys at DallasCowboys.com, providing all sorts of audio and video analysis. That audio analysis includes complete draft coverage tonight through the Dallas Cowboys radio network, and he is now nice enough to join me to talk about the draft and also the Cowboys offseason to a lesser degree. Kyle, thank you as always for the time. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's one of my favorite days of the entire year, ready to get tonight underway and see what the future of the league has in store. We've got a fun one in store all the way through.
Yeah, I love this day because it's when these two excellent levels of football converge, college and professional. It is the greatest feeder system on the planet for a sport because we know who a lot of these college guys are, and so we just get to keep rooting for or against them as professionals. And the Dallas Cowboys certainly have some ideas for holes that they need to fill, and in most mock drafts, I do see Dallas taking an offensive lineman with that first-round pick. Ultimately, is that where you think that they head with their first-round draft pick? And if so, who is the most likely candidate there?
Yeah, I think there's a couple names to look forward to. And overall, I don't think anything's a 100% certainty when it comes to the draft. It's just such an up and down, ebb and flow sort of night. But this is about as close of a 100% certainty. I really do think Dallas is going to take an offensive lineman with the 24th overall pick or their first pick in general. They could still very much so trade out of that first round pick and move back, try and acquire some picks later on. I think if we're talking about most likely scenarios, I think that's at the top of the list for me. I really do see an opportunity here for Dallas and their current cap situation, their current situation from a talent standpoint, of taking the opportunity to slide back a couple of selections, possibly even out of the first round, to pick up some late day two, early day three picks to try and stack their roster with. But if they do end up staying and picking, I think they're going to have some high confidence in the guy that they are selecting. I think Graham Barton out of Duke, offensive lineman who translates best as a center, possibly a guard, but he played his left tackle snaps throughout his final season with Duke and had a phenomenal career with the Blue Devils. I think he's probably at the top of the list, along with Troy Fontenot from Washington, an offensive tackle that also looks like he's going to slide inside to the guard spot. And then even Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, I think, is on their radar. He may be more of a trade back scenario if things fall the way that they at least anticipate them falling. He may be a trade back, or if they don't have a trade partner, they may go ahead and make that selection. But lots of ways to finagle this thing and a couple of names to keep an eye on.
You said those other two tackles project as guys who kick inside when it's all said and done. Guyton does project more as a straight tackle, though, correct?
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's still making a position change because he was very inexperienced at the left guard spot, only had one start at left tackle, at the left tackle spot for Oklahoma. He played the majority of his snaps at right tackle. So even though he is going to stay outside, and he's got the length to do so, 6'8", 320-plus pounds, he's got some exceptional length. I really do think Tyler Guyton is a good fit if you want to stretch on a guy that's probably a second-round grade. He's not going to be a first-round grade for this Cowboys front office, but that's kind of what they're having to pick from at 24 overall. You're most likely going to get a second-round graded player, and he's one of those guys at the top of the list if they do end up staying and picking or trading back.
So considering that the Cowboys' run defense was not very good last year, obviously they're having to reload on the offensive line. Tyron Smith officially gone now. The Guyton pick or somebody else may help to address that. But it's been a relatively quiet offseason for Dallas in terms of acquiring talent. So is their focus as simple as really looking up the middle of that defense and also cherry-picking the occasional offensive lineman, or are they more set on going with the best player available, especially in the first couple of days of the draft?
Yeah, I think there's times where teams do put themselves in a position to be best player available. Just the way that this roster is constructed right now, I don't think you have that freedom. There are picks that need to be made this weekend that need to have immediate contribution. And part of that is because you didn't get immediate contribution last year from your draft class. I mean, Mazi Smith is a first-round pick, not to any fault of his own, but DeMarvian Overshown as a third-round pick would have been a great addition to the second level of that defense. Hopefully, those guys take a step forward, and Overshown is healthy enough to make a step forward this year as well, because he certainly looked to be heading in the right direction prior to the injury in the preseason. But when you didn't get that same level of production from your 2023 draft class, I think it puts extra pressure on your 24 draft class to come in immediately and be ready to contribute, especially whenever it's a roster that is still very talented. You have all the all-pros that you had a year ago that won the NFC East, that set yourself up for success going into the postseason, but then fell short in the postseason. You can still build on that if you hit on some of these draft picks. So I think you nailed it. I really do. In a roundabout way of answering the question, I think you're going to look at offensive line, both interior and outside, at some point in the draft. You're probably going to see an interior offensive lineman and a tackle taken in this draft, so multiple offensive linemen taken. But then you go straight down the middle, defensive tackle, linebacker, possibly safety. If you wanted to address edge rusher, it just has to be the perfect value. And they may find that. They may find that perfect value. But overall, there's lots of holes that need to be filled. I think you're going to see needs filled quicker than the wants in this draft class.
It's funny because the caveat there is a position that you didn't mention, but in most 2 to 3 round mock drafts that we've seen over the last couple of months, the Cowboys end up going running back either in the second or third round. And it's a guy that people here in Austin are very familiar with, Jonathan Brooks, coming off of that season-ending knee injury. He was excellent prior to that in a really good conference for running backs this year. Was probably the front runner for all-conference running back, maybe pushing for All-American honors too. He had his surgery performed by the Dallas Cowboys surgeon, and so I think for a lot of reasons this does make sense. Why is Dallas so high on Jonathan Brooks, and ultimately do you think he ends up landing in the DFW area?
Yeah, I really do think there's a chance, and they are very high on what Brooks brings to the table. There's a chance that he's there at 56. I don't think they would stretch on him in the first round, but let's say he does make it to 56. I think it comes down to linebacker and running back, and I did leave out running back earlier, but I totally should have put that position in the group, because right now your starting running back is Royce Freeman and Malik Davis. I mean, that's just kind of the guys you've got right now after taking Deuce Vaughn in the sixth round last year.
Keep seeing these stories pop up that the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott are having conversations about a reunion. Do you expect Zeke to be a part of this roster when the 2024 season rolls around?
I don't know if it's expected, but I'm glad they're having the conversation because it just seems like it's a perfect fit. Dallas is in no situation whatsoever to be comfortable at running back. Now, if they do get a Jonathan Brooks, I think they'd be very comfortable at running back, and I don't think Ezekiel Elliott would necessarily be needed in that room. But if, let's say, they try and stretch it, which happened last year, they had very high hopes that Charbonnet out of UCLA last year could have fallen to him, and they didn't get that to happen. Let's say a situation like that happens here where the value just isn't right. They go in a different direction. They fill some other spots, and then they're going into the season with a huge question mark at running back. I think Ezekiel Elliott would be a great fit in Dallas, and he'd bring a veteran mentality. Of course, he brings a great locker room presence. He was great with the guys in the locker room throughout his career in Dallas, and of course, you know his friendship with Dak Prescott as well, and that always helps out whenever you've got those guys on the same page. So it's a talking point, no doubt about it. Is it a foregone conclusion? No, I don't think you can expect it to happen, but if things fall the right way, you could see Zeke back in the Cowboys uniform, which would, I think, be a fun reunion for everybody.
Let's end with this, Kyle, because it's been a weird offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones comes out initially, says we're going all in on next season. A week later, he backtracks on that. The lack of free agency moves would suggest that they're not going to try and do too much in the way of going all in. But a couple of days ago, he uses the all-in phrase once again. I set all of that up to ask you because Dak Prescott is entering the final year of his deal. Do you expect Dak Prescott to be this team's quarterback at the start of the 2025 season?
I do. I really do. I still think there's a possibility a deal gets done by the time training camp rolls around or by the time it concludes in Oxnard. I really think they're still working that direction. Now, the pace of it hasn't happened the way that I anticipated it either. And I've been wrong before, especially whenever it comes to high-profile cases like the quarterback position where the NFL has shown it's just as unpredictable in those situations as it is on draft night sometimes. Both parties having the mindset that they do want to make a deal and they do want to get an extension taken care of, that's the deciding factor for me in saying I do think a deal gets done. Because if one party was unsure about the other, then maybe there's a question mark. I think right now it's just money and it's leverage, and Dak Prescott has the leverage. The Cowboys have the money that they need to figure out. And then once they finally get on the same page there, they've been on the same page in every other regard throughout. So I do still think a deal gets done. So I'll say yes, I do anticipate Dak being the quarterback in 2025. Now, of course, things can change and things can certainly turn on a dime in the NFL. Injuries and souring of relationships and all of these things can happen. But if you're asking me right now as we sit going into draft night 2024, yeah, Dak Prescott's back behind center in two seasons.
All right, great to know. He is Kyle Yeomans, doing a great job covering the Dallas Cowboys and the NFL on the whole through DallasCowboys.com. Just came out with his final mock draft a couple of hours ago. You can go to DallasCowboys.com to check that out and hear him on the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network tonight, anchoring coverage of the 2024 NFL Draft first round. Kyle, thank you as always for the time. Real joy, man. Best of luck with things tonight and all weekend long.
Yeah, appreciate you for having me, and good luck to everybody out there watching their Longhorns. I know there's a lot of pride down there on the 40 acres for who's going to get their names called tonight.
No doubt, Kyle. Thank you. Coming up, it's Where Are We At in Society right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. And we start in the world of, I can't call it competitive eating, because I don't think there's a trophy or first, second, slash third place on the line. But gluttony challenges are almost always amusing. I know from experience, not just as a former fat kid whose younger brothers would just watch me gorge myself silly and then puke it all up, not sticking my finger down my throat necessarily, but literally puking it up like a dog who has eaten too much. Fast forward several years after I'd gotten a hold on my own personal health, and I would occasionally challenge friends who were braggadociously gluttonous, some of whom had a hard time not staring at the food I was eating when I was consuming something like a dog, who for whatever reason thought that it was easy to eat an insane amount of food and keep it down. My favorite example is a friend that I was living with from college who always used to love to eyeball my Arby's roast beef sandwiches or whatever I was getting from Arby's. Had to have involved some curly fries too. That was easily the best thing at Arby's. Roast beef is okay. You find out how that stuff is packaged, it becomes a little bit less appetizing, but I would still turn to Arby's from time to time as a poor college kid. Well, at one point, we got to the subject of the great deal that Arby's was offering back in the early 2000s. You may remember this if you were a consumer of Arby's back in the early 2000s. The 5 for $5 deal. That's right, 5 Arby's roast beef sandwiches for $5. There were other dollar menus in town, even though this technically wasn't a dollar menu item. It was a dollar per sandwich. For my money, there wasn't a better way to spend $5. No dollar menu compared to the 5 roast beef sandwiches. And it usually didn't take 5 to completely fill me up. 2, maybe 3. Got to put a lot of mustard and some pickles and some other stuff on there too, just to add a little bit of moisture, you know? Well, at one point, this braggadocious friend insisted to me that he could eat 10 Arby's roast beef sandwiches in one sitting, no problem. So I created what I called the Arby's Roast Beef Sandwich Challenge. I'll buy the 10 sandwiches. I'll put the $10 plus tax up. So let's see, around $10.80 for the 10 roast beef sandwiches. And if you complete the challenge, which does always have to include not puking for at least, I don't know, an hour after you finish the last sandwich, then, well, I've eaten the $10, figuratively. But if you don't make it, you owe me the $10. You're the one that had to pay for that level of misery that you foisted upon yourself. This friend, very confident, very arrogant about it. Went and got the sandwiches, brought them back, sits down to eat the sandwiches. And I mean, he is cruising through the first 2, 3, 4, even 5 sandwiches. Get to 6. Puts that one down fairly easily. And I was saying to myself, wow, this is interesting. This isn't going to end well for him, but it does seem like he is going to be able to eat these 10 sandwiches no problem. And then sandwich 7 got there, and you saw the slowdown. It's like a big, fat defensive lineman in the fourth quarter of a game. All of a sudden, those energy levels aren't quite there. Starting to writhe a little bit, starting to rock back and forth, hands on the hips, like he's trying to catch his breath. He makes it through the 7th sandwich, but at that point, he is in immense physical pain. Get to sandwich 8. I said, hey, you can stop right now. You just call it. It's okay. Most normal humans shouldn't be able to eat 10 Arby's roast beef sandwiches in one sitting. You're not even that fat of a dude. You just got strangely braggadocious about your own gluttony, and it's backfiring right now. That's okay. Wave the white flag. It doesn't make you any less of a man. It probably makes you more of a man to be able to do so. But he insisted on starting on sandwich 8. Halfway through sandwich 8. Oh, what's that? You don't feel very good? Yeah, you shouldn't feel very good. You just eaten 7.5 Arby's roast beef sandwiches, friend. And sure enough, he gets up, goes to the bathroom. And I'd probably say he puked, maybe not all 7.5 Arby's roast beef sandwiches into the toilet. Let's say he puked at least 5 of those into the toilet, though. Challenge over. I was cracking up. Our other roommates were cracking up. It was amusing beyond belief. And by the way, I didn't make him pay me the 10 bucks. That was 10 bucks well spent to watch a dumbass try and eat more food than they can actually consume. I have another example also. Now, we're not even going to get to the story at this pace. But I watched a guy at a really good Vietnamese spot off of William Cannon and Mopac insist on ordering the hottest version of what this restaurant had to offer with its pho. Asked the server, who I think was probably from Vietnam. The accent suggested that he was not necessarily from the U.S., and so his tongue is going to be a little bit different. How hot do you like it? The server said, hotter than you probably want it. He said, no. I love spicy. Bring me the spicy. It was me, this dude, his girlfriend was sitting right there. 2 slurps into this pho. This guy, his face was beet red, bordering on purple, sweating profusely, but insisting on continuing to eat like this, despite the fact that it was clearly not good for his health in that moment. And dare I say, there was a slight risk for death then and there. Didn't keep the girlfriend and me from cracking up. And the server, by the way, who would come back and check on him from time to time and ask if he needed a glass of milk or anything, and him insisting not, can only imagine how much worse things got for him several hours later when he had to pay a trip to the bathroom. Yeah, that's going to leave a mark, figuratively and literally. But I mention all of this because a restaurant in the UK has a chicken wing eating challenge. But they are requiring anybody who steps up to try and complete this challenge to sign a waiver before they begin that gives an assurance that they understand that a loss of life is possible from attempting to eat these really spicy chicken wings. Challengers have to eat 15 chicken wings coated in Carolina Reaper sauce. If they can eat all 15 wings in just 10 minutes and then endure a 5-minute burn time upon completion, they get their meal for free and are added to a Hall of Fame wall in the restaurant. Well, I can't even imagine some of the winners on that wall. The second point of this waiver that diners have to sign says, quote, I acknowledge that I will be engaging in the Earn Your Wings Challenge, whereby there may be a risk of personal injury, illness, or possible loss of life and damage to or loss of personal property. These people in these pictures are literally having to wear gloves because if this stuff gets on your skin, it burns that badly. The Carolina Reaper is 200 times hotter than your garden variety jalapeno. It was considered the hottest pepper in the world from 2013 up until last year when it was actually surpassed by a pepper developed by somebody else called Pepper X. Restaurant staff says most of the would-be competitors don't finish the plate, with just 3 out of 12 successfully completing the $20 or so challenge. Just pay the 20 bucks, guys. Come on. And real quick, on our way out, the Washington Commanders are trying to popularize a new slogan, raise hail, hashtag raise hail. Yes, raise your hail hand sign, Washington Commanders. I can't think of anything in the last 100 years that would suggest raising your hail hand sign, raise hail, H-A-I-L, that would be problematic in some way, shape, or form. Except for that whole Hail Hitler thing. But hey, good luck with the new slogan. And that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll be back tomorrow at 6. That includes a conversation. My friend Kevin Dunn is hopping back on to share his thoughts on the first round of the NFL draft, which comes up next right here on 102.7 ESPN. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.